Good evening. My name is Russell Stats. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's a privilege to be at an AA meeting. It's a privilege to be at this group. I love this group. It's been around for many years. It was around when I came in about 30 years ago. Today, this month's my birthday month, so I'm grateful to God for that. And, of course, it was in a different location. And tonight, we're still continuing the step series, and I'm going to try to talk a little bit about step three. You know, I can wander. That'll happen, but hopefully we shouldn't have any problem with step three, because you've sat through any of my step meetings, you know, they're mostly all step three meetings anyway. So I'm finally talking about, the talk will be on the actual step we're doing. And actually, I had an incredible step three meeting planned for you guys. You know, I seldom plan these meetings, but I actually had one of the greatest step three meetings. It was just unbelievable. I mean, it excited me. Yeah, and I was thinking about it this morning. It was just, I can't even explain to you how insightful and inspirational it was, but unfortunately I forgot about it. But it was great in my car this morning when I was driving. You guys really enjoyed it. You would have enjoyed it. Yeah, but so I'm just going to do the best I can. Like we talked last time, I'm just going to try and do the best I can. Might be the worst third step meeting I've ever done in my life. It's going to be the best one I can do tonight. So I was... I'm going to read some stuff from the book, and then I want to share some experiences with you. And, you know, it's really, whenever I do any meeting, but especially a step three meeting, what I really pray, you know, and I say I pray before I do a meeting, and what I really pray is that somehow, some way, I can sort of get out of the way and get my person. I know I got a strong personality, get that sort of out of the way so that somehow, some way, I can touch somebody so they can somehow experience or get a glimpse of what's happened to me. Because I came in an atheist or an agnostic and a Jewish kid from New York, and I'm a believer, and I'm a deacon in a Presbyterian church. I mean, I've come a long way. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that you got to be a deacon in a Presbyterian church, or, you know, you got to follow any faith or any religion. You know, we'll talk a little bit more about that, because the big book talks about getting involved in religious organizations, and I'm a strong believer. I have certain beliefs and opinions that'll come out in my story, that we're not anti-religious. A lot of people come to AA because of the way the groups are formulated now and the way the fellowship is, and you hear a lot of stuff that sort of like puts religious down. I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, like there's something wrong with religion. And in true alcoholic fashion, because we want to be cool and we want to be liked, we sort of like go along with that crowd of the loudest voices, when I think most of the old times I know that I respect understand that the big book, if you read the big book and you understand the big book, it says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. We see where religious people are right. They actually encourage church membership and membership in synagogues and things like that, and not putting down religious people. The truth of the matter is that sort of attitude is more the attitude of being anti-religious and prejudiced against religion is more the attitude of the alcoholic personality and the person who's still drinking than the person that's supposed to try to be sober. And of course, this is all my opinion. The great thing about this group is the only qualification for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So you can do it any way you want. You know, it's your life. And when you come to the end of your life, you're the one who's either going to be satisfied with it or dissatisfied with it. Nobody can tell you what to do. And you get to meet me, you get to meet other people with other opinions. And this is what you do. You sit there and you say, I like that guy, I don't like that guy. I want what that guy has, I don't want what that guy has. And it's your life, and you do your deal. You know, I wish I had the power, and I don't even know how that works. I wish I had the power to touch somebody or, you know, let them see what I've seen or believe what I believe. And, you know, I wasn't given that power. I was given the obligation. I can't, and I don't. And as a matter of fact, my religion, my belief, essentially would prohibit me from imposing my religious beliefs on anybody, but it requires me, as I think A does, to expose my beliefs to people. That's what it's all about. That's what the big book says on page 29. It says each individual, using his own words and his own story in his own language, tells how he discovered his relationship, how he formulated his relationship with God, and that's what I'm going to talk about tonight. And I know I don't have the power, because after being involved in this in 30 years, one of the benefits of being involved for 30 years is you get a certain amount of experience. I mean, we all come in here thinking we're bright, brilliant. I mean, maybe for a nanosecond we give up the ghost, we surrender, and we say I need help and everything. But shortly after that, we're back to being brilliant again. And, you know, the chief character, you know, and saying you don't understand, and, you know, the chief characteristic of alcoholics, according to the big book, is defiance. And you know, most of the things I'm going to talk to you about, I think today, are not going to be my opinion. They may sound my opinion because I am somebody who was steeped in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've lived this thing. And I'd like to think that almost everything I say to you tonight, even though it may sound in my own words and everything, somewhere is found in the big book. It's somewhere found in the book of you know, our best thinking got us in here. And one of the reasons people stay sober for 25, 30 years and are sober to good purpose and feel good about themselves and experience these promises is because they follow this book. Now let's face it, most of the stuff in this book, we wouldn't have followed when we were out there using our own brains. Our alcoholic lives are the only normal one, and our normal alcoholic life says this book is a bunch of crap. Most of the stuff in this book is crap. If we're lucky, we come in here, we start adopting this. And what happens, I think, for the alcoholic who stays here and matures is over a period of time, he starts acting and thinking more like what they're talking about in this book. And so when I first came in here, what I really identified with and what most people identify with and what they see when they think they're reading the big book is about the drinking and about the drinking stories and about the jaywalker. And you start off and you can't put it down and you pledge your stop and you switch from wine to beer, you know, and we identify with the first part, you know, more about alcoholism. There is a solution and all that sort of stuff. We identify with that. I say, we come in here thinking nobody understands me. Nobody can possibly understand what I'm going through. Nobody can understand what's going on with me. And you read this book and you identify with it. You say, holy crap, these guys are following me around. This is a book about me. And you get excited. Because when you live your life thinking nobody knows anything about you and can never know anything about you because you're alone and there's nobody you can talk to. And then all of a sudden you pick up a book and it's like your diary. It's like an exciting deal. You can't put it down. But the truth is, what you really get excited not about most of the time is not the God thing. As a matter of fact, the book says the God thing is that turns you sort of like don't see that. You know, I tell a story, and I've told it many times here before. It bears telling again. I mean, the story I tell is a true story. My first wife, she told me after, you know, we were married, and I was in the house, and says, come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Pretty clear, pretty simple statement. You know, I was sober when I heard it. It's about as sober as I am right now, physically. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. You guys understand what that said? You understand that's not true? Listen, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I got in my car, drove 3 blocks to a stoplight. I said, well, what the hell did she mean by that? Now, if you sort of like, when you work with alcoholics over a period of 30 years and you hear that story over and over and over again, giant red lights in the sky saying, stop, don't do this, and they're constantly doing it. You realize that there's really a spiritual axiom in there, and that is whenever part of the nature of this disease, it says if and when an alcoholic does not accept his alcoholism, his devastating weakness, and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious, and true happiness, he'll find none at all. That you find that there's a lot of consequences and a lot of symptoms of alcoholism besides drinking. And one of the symptoms and consequences of being an alcoholic that you ultimately learn about is not only our defiance, and the fact that we don't want to listen to people, but whenever we're told or hear something from the podium or out there or told anything by anybody that we don't like or doesn't fit into our way of thinking, it confuses us. And we somehow dispel it and want to constantly stay with our way of thinking because we're comfortable with our way of thinking. So when you live a life where you think God is bullshit and that's uncool and people are laughing, and another thing about alcoholics is, I've never met an alcoholic who doesn't want to belong, no matter what he says. I don't care if they say, I don't give a crap what they think about you. That's what alcoholics say. You ever hear that? I don't give a crap what they think about me. Well, let me explain something to you. Now, I never realized this, but people that say, I don't give a crap what they think about me, all they do is care about what other people think about them. Because people who really don't care what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a crap what other people think about me. They say things like, pass the salt, you know what I mean? But they don't say that, you know? And we drink because we don't give a crap what they think about us, you know, because we're angry and we're mad and we don't feel accepted. So when you come in here, you hear anything. So the truth of the matter is, you want to belong. You don't want people laughing at you. And if you live in this world, the same world I'm living in, you know, if you're going to talk about the Bible or Jesus or the synagogue or anything, if you're going to talk about God, they're all going to laugh at you. They laugh at you on TV. They put down religious people, right? We're stupid. Religious people, believers are stupid. They look at you funny. We don't want to look like, we want to blend. We want to be at the Playboy Mansion. Nobody's talking about God at the Playboy Mansion. Nobody's talking about, we want to be at South Beach, right? Nobody's talking about God. You don't walk in a bar in South Beach and they say, listen, let's talk about God. You don't want to hear about it. Those are party poopers. So understand, you are hair triggered. That's what it says in the big book, to get mad at that stuff. But when we first come in, what excites us, what we all agree on is this guy understands about a drinking. And so that but what's really exciting is when you're here for a few years and you read parts of the book like this. And this is in He Sells Himself Short. These last 18 years of my life has been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chopping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And you know, I'll tell you something. When you've gained the greatest thing, according to any man, the love and respect of a gracious God that you have a relationship, I can guarantee you one thing. You'll never have to worry about what other people think about you again. So if you've ever had the thought, what did I say or what do they think about me? If that makes you feel good, thinking like that, then you keep on doing what you're doing. But if thinking about what other people are thinking about you, worrying about what you look like, worry about whether you measure up, if that feels horrible to you and you don't know how to get rid of it, you might want to consider a different way of doing it. What's exciting in AA is when you start identifying with that stuff. When you start reading in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. When you start identifying with that stuff, not the drinking stuff, but that stuff, that's exciting to me. When you start listening to those promises, it says you're going to know a new freedom, you're going to know a new happiness. No matter how far you've gone down, you see where it can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness is going to disappear. That feeling of loneliness is going to disappear. Fear of people is going to disappear. Economic insecurity, fear of it, is going to disappear. You'll begin to say how God is doing for you what you can't do for yourself. When you start identifying with that all the time, then you've got something going. Then you got a new deal. You got something called emotional sobriety. When you start identifying with the fact where it talks about, you stop thinking about yourself, your little plans and designs, and fear of yesterday, today, and tomorrow will be gone, will dispel, you'll be reborn. When you start identifying with the kind of stuff they're talking about in here, which has nothing to do with drinking, it has nothing to do even with alcoholism. It has to do with being free. When you start reading that and you start saying, holy crap, they're talking about my life. That's the way I am today. Then you're dealing with something. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about that freedom. And the problem is, and it's not so much a problem, it's the way I guess God made it out. The only way this thing works is we tell our testimony, our story. That's why it says our story is disclosed in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like now. And so if you're only in here to stay dry and not drink, and that's the biggest thing to you, then this story really isn't for you. It really isn't. But if you're in here for the other stuff, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that, then maybe this might help you out. Maybe one day, if not tonight, maybe some other time. But before I go into that, I want to tell you a little, I know whether you call it a joke or something. You know, I was thinking about telling this thing for whatever reason. You know, Lord puts this stuff in my mind, on my heart, and I want to tell. I said, why do I want to tell that? How does it fit in? And I was sitting down. And one of my buddies said, are you going to tell that story about, and he was talking about out of the blue. And anybody knows me knows I'm a talker. I've got a lot of these talks. And this is one story I've told. I think the last time I told it was like 10 years ago or 5 years ago. And I sit down and I was thinking about telling it. And he says, are you going to tell that story? And I said, I was thinking about telling that story. I said, I guess I'm supposed to. That's like a sign, right? So some of you may have heard this. You heard the story about the $10 boat trip to the Bahamas. It's true. This guy's walking down the street, and he sees a sign in Miami. It says, cruise to the Bahamas, $10. So he walks in. He says, you know, you got the sign out there, cruise to the Bahamas, $10. He says, is that legitimate? He says, absolutely. Guy behind the counter says, absolutely. He says, $10 a cruise to the Bahamas. He says, absolutely. He says, any additional truck? No, $10. He says, you're trying to tell me I can have a cruise to the Bahamas for $10? He says, absolutely. No hitches, right? $10. He says, you got $10 in your pocket? We're leaving now. You're on the cruise. You got $10? He says, I got $10. He says, give it to me. You're on the cruise. So the guy hands him $10. And a second after he hands him $10, he's knocked unconscious. He wakes up after he doesn't know whether a day's gone by, hours go by, minutes, he doesn't know. And he's floating in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on an inner tube. Just floating in the middle of, and the sun is going down to the horizons. There's no land around. He seems to be floating. He's like floating, you know, east. At least he's going in like the right direction, I suppose, you know, towards the Bahamas or something. And he's out there all alone. And all of a sudden, he sees like 100 yards in the distance, a little further ahead of him, another guy in an inner tube with a baseball cap. So he starts furiously swimming to the other guy with a baseball cap. He finally catches up to him. The guy's sitting there in the baseball cap floating. He says, do you believe this? I mean, $10 for a cruise. They hit me over the head. We're in the middle of, where are we? We don't even know where we are. And the guy says, with the baseball cap, he says, hey, tell me about it. He says, I can't even believe they're allowed to do this. This is illegal. This is unbelievable. We're going to die on it. He says, I can't believe this is happening. He says, hey, you kidding me? Tell me about it. Tell me about it. He says, I mean, I don't know. Are we going to die on it? Where are we going? I mean, is this it? I mean, I cannot believe that people are allowed to. He says, hey, tell me about it. So they're just floating together east. And finally, the guy turns to the guy in the baseball cap and says, well, I don't know. You think, do they feed us on this cruise? And the guy in the baseball cap says, I don't know. They didn't last year. You know, I've tried to think. I've told that story before. Alki's really like that story. It's kind of sick, isn't it? You ever try to figure out why Alki's like sick humor? You know, I try to say, well, why don't alcoholics like that story? Because they always like stories about them. Because if you know anything about alcoholics, and I've been working with them for 30 years, I now realize we're the guys in the baseball cap. You're the guys in the... You think that's funny? You're the guys in the baseball cap. You're the guys taking the $10 cruise to pay cheap money, to cut corners, to try to, you know, play the angles and manage your life and get away with stuff and do it your way, the easier, softer way, because you're going to get a great cruise to the Bahamas and find yourself swimming in an inner tube without food in the Atlantic Ocean. And you're ready for this? And you do it over and over and over again. You do it over and over and over again. At 3 o'clock in the morning, not being able to get to sleep, worrying about a million things. Sober, you're trying to figure out what this bullshit is all about. If you're sober, why do you feel this way? Why are you always thinking this way? Why do you always feel this way? It's because you're always on the $10 cruise. You'll never get off the $10 cruise because your alcoholic life is the only normal one, drunk or sober, because alcoholism is around even if you're sober, because it has nothing to do with being drunk. It says men won't drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And the bottom line is that you're restless, you're irritable, you're discontented, you're always going to lead to failure. Your best thinking is going to get you in here and produce toxic waste, and you're always going to buy into that because you think you don't even know how to think your way out of it. Because it's the only way, normal way of thinking. It's the way of thinking you're used to. And when somebody says to you, we got a cruise for you, where you're eating lobster every day, and the most unbelievable cruise in the world, but it's going to cost you a price that you don't want to pay, you figure out how to do it differently. And you never win. And it doesn't matter that you may see the people on the cruise ship waving to you. You may even meet those people that talk about the cruise. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is, whether they're on the cruise or not, you know that cruise isn't for you, because somehow you're going to experience that incredible cruise, but you only want to pay $10. You don't want to pay the ultimate price. You don't want to give in, because for whatever defect of character or reason you have that substitutes for intelligence or being cool, you just don't want to pay that price. You're not willing, even though it says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it. Well, you're willing to go to any length, but you're just not willing to go that far. So whatever device you use in your mind that seems logical to you, you figure out how to do it differently than it's put down in here, and you're always on the $10 cruise. And you'll die on the $10 cruise. And you can't understand why you can't get off the $10 cruise. Because even though the big book says that you're alcoholic, even though it says we are convinced, if you read all this and you hear all this and you read the stories in the book, even though the big book is clearly a book that says God either is or he isn't, what is your answer going to be? This sort of thing, it has to be abandoned. Even though the big book says, job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Even though the big book says, burn the idea into the conscience of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone, the only condition is that he trust God and clean house. Even though the big book says, and this is in my opinion, I'm reading here, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. Or his car back, or his job back, or anything back, or money. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Even though the big book says, we in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Even though it says, if what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. With a living creator. A living creator. You need to think about that next time you think about the doorknob. Or the group. It's not, you can make the group when you first come in. You can make it anything you want to do. But you can fake it until you make it. But you want to know something? Eventually, you really need to make it. Because if you fake it all your life, all you're going to get is what fake stuff gives you. They're talking about a living creator. A living creator. That's what they're talking about. They're not talking about the group. Because you know what the group is composed of? People. You know what our big book says? You have to be convinced of this. That if you're an alcoholic, you cannot manage your own life. It's not you. That no human power, no group of people can relieve your alcoholism. But only God could and would if he was sought. Don't we read at every meeting? There is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Does it say your sponsor? May you find him now. The group? May you find him now. Does it say we only have one power in the group? You know, basically a decision based upon God. Isn't God all over this program? I mean, how clear does it have to be? If a mere philosophy of life, if better morals would help us, we would have gotten sober long ago. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to found power. That's why we wrote a book where we talk about God. And that's when the hackles on our necks stand up and we say, this sort of feeling, this has to be abandoned. God either is or he isn't. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator. That's how they define God, as a living creator. And that's important. I'm going to explain to you why that's important, why that kind of faith is important. I don't expect you to buy into this right now or even listen to what I have to say. This may be the kind of thing like 8 months from now or 2 years from now or 10 years from now, maybe after a few drunks or something. All of a sudden you start listening to this stuff. You might even forget where it came from or that you heard it before. A living creator, but there's a reason why it has to do with a living creator. And that's the thing I really want to talk about tonight, which I'll get into shortly. With whom we may form a relationship. What's a relationship? You know, somebody asked me, do I know Saul over there? I said, I know Saul. How do you know Saul? I talk to him all the time. I see him. I know what he looks like. I have familiarity. I know how he thinks. I know how he is. When I see him, I say hi. He says, hi, Russ. I say, hi, Saul. I have a relationship with Saul. I have a relationship with John back there. You know, I have a relationship with different people. It says, which we may form a relationship with God. You know, if you're not thinking about him, if you're not talking about him, you can mouth the words all you want. If you're not thinking about him, if you're not talking about him, if you want to hang around people, other people that know him, if you're not friendly towards him, if you don't care about him and he doesn't care about you, and you don't think, if he's not part of you, then you don't have a relationship with him. It's just a word to you. As soon as we are, it says, but we can have a relationship, we can form a relationship on simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. And the whole book is just about that deal. It's about forming that relationship. And finally, when we get that relationship, we get to step 11. And then what does it say? We try to improve that relationship. Isn't that what it says? What is step 4 and 5 about? Except to knock out the sunshine of the Spirit. We don't have these defects to block the sunshine of the Spirit. So we can have a better relationship. What does it say after step 5 in the big book? Look at the chapter Into Action after step 4. You know what it says? Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator. There he is again. And to discover the obstacles in our path. That's what it's about. It's all about the relationship with the Creator. If you're not talking about the relationship with the Creator, if you're not talking about relationship, so why do I say relationship with the Creator is important? You ever hear the term higher power? You ever hear that term, people say higher power? What do they mean by that? What does the book define God as? Higher power is kind of fuzzy. You know, if they wanted to use higher power throughout the book, instead of a deity, if that's all they meant, just higher power, whatever that is, they would have taken the word God out a long time ago. God is all through. They knew that God pissed people off. God is all, what does it mean? Think about what that means, higher. What is it? What are we talking about there? Can this be my higher power? Can this be my living creator? Is that what they're talking about? Really think this is my living? You think, is the wind my living creator? Is that? Listen, I see, after 30 years of doing this thing, I see two different, one of the great things about being sober is you get experience, you learn a lot from experience. I mean, your thinking will only get you so far. Sometimes I don't know about you, but my best thinking on my best day used to get me in a shitload of trouble. You ever have that happen? You make decisions that seem like the right decision at the right time. Next thing you know, you're like in jail. But it seemed like, you ever think, boy, I should marry that girl. And then a year later saying, I must have been crazy. You know, I should take that job and say, boy, that was the dumbest thing I ever done. You know, if you're an alcoholic like me, I wouldn't necessarily trust your thinking. Because you learn a lot by experience. And the unfortunate thing about alcoholics is we don't learn by experience. We learn by experience times 1,000. Over and over and over again. And then somebody beats the crap out of us and says, stupid, don't do it again. And we argue with them. We say, you don't understand. God only knows how any of us, but experience has taught me a couple things. Let me tell you what I've seen in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've seen two types of people. And I know I'm generalizing. And all generalizations are, dangerous, including this one. But I'm going to make it anyway. And you can tell, I see two types of people. Two types of things going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you get to choose which deal you're going to be involved in. I see people in Alcoholics Anonymous that think this is about not drinking. As a matter of fact, they get pissed and they get mad if you go anywhere beyond the not drinking. They might be an old timer, might get a guy with 25 years or 30 years, and what they think is, this is about not drinking. As a matter of fact, we hand out medallions, right? For what? Not drinking. You can be a serial killer and rapist. You know, you can rape 15 nuns and a priest and, shoot 5 dogs. If you got 1 year sobriety, we're giving you a medallion. It don't matter. We don't care what your spiritual life is. We don't care what your emotional life is. We don't care that you've had 18 marriages, 14 kids that you don't support, that you're mad as shit, that you don't sponsor anybody because nobody wants what you have. You know, you're angry Harry or you're pissed off George or whatever it is, and that you're saying that all I need is the first step. This God stuff is about. We don't care about that. You got 5 years, you're getting the medallion. Because it's all about not drinking. And that is real prevalent in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are large groups of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that think that's what this program is about. And in one sense, if you believe that and you hang true to that for whatever reason, and the reason might be because, and the reason why I think it is because you don't want to change. You don't really want to give up. You really don't want to surrender. You really want to do it your way, the same way,
not the open-minded way. You don't want to surrender, and you're pissed off anybody who tries to force you to surrender. And so you surrender to the alcohol, and you want to do it that deal. First of all, it's a tough deal to do because a lot of people drink with that deal. But some people, believe it or not, will hang in there. You'll hear of guys for 15, 20, 30 years, and they're pissed. They're pissed off at anybody who talks about God or even thinks about religion or anything like that, because that's not what AA is about. It's about not drinking. It's hard to argue with that, because it is about not drinking. It's almost like, and then there's a whole other group of people, which, quite frankly, I think Bill Wilson was a part of. More to the point, I think Dr. Bob was big time a part of it. And whether you want to call it the religious people or whatever people you want to talk about, I was just listening to a tape by Bill D., the man on the bed, you know, where he started off an AA meeting with a prayer, where you realize the first 4 years of AA, they're reading the Bible, the Holy Bible, where they're talking about, it's clear that they're talking about, if you really want to be open-minded, they're talking about a deity, they're talking about God, they're talking about a living, breathing, serious, conscious entity that has your best interests at heart. That's what they're talking about in here. Now, you can call it any, you want to call it Muhammad, you want to call it Jesus, you want to call it the great banana, you can call anything. But there is one who has all power. That one is God, and he's God, and we pray to God because we believe we are not alone, and he is looking out for us, and he will do for us. It's not impersonal. You have a personal relationship, and he will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves because he loves us, and he cares about us, and he wants to have a relationship with us. And that's not a desk. That's not the wind. You know what I mean? I don't care what name you put on it. That is something that's around. And the bottom line is, and Bill Wilson said, the next step is emotional sobriety. It's about unhealthy dependencies on people, places, and things that always lead to dissatisfaction, spiritual dissatisfaction. And you know, if you don't get this God thing down, if you don't figure this thing out, you may stay sober. You may stay sober physically, but you won't get what they got. Experience what you have to be rocking the fourth dimension of existence. Because in order to get what they got, they say right here in the book, they say, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator, there he is again, our Creator. Why do they use the word Creator? Creator is not desk. It's not horse, it's not mule, it's not wind. Our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives, which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things, which can, and they use the word he. Does that mean he's a man or a woman? Or what? No, it's he, it's a spirit, whatever it is, but it's something that you can have a relationship with. It's something that's conscious, that cares about you. Because if higher power, and then later on, and this is what I really want to get into right over here, when they talk about the third step, and they say being convinced of those things, that you can't do it, no human can do it, only God could do if he was sought, being convinced you're now at step three, it says the following. It says selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. That's the real problem we have. If you're an alcoholic, you're selfish and self-centered. If you don't think you are, it's just because you're delusional. It's true. It's true. That's not me. That's the big book. It says, but I don't think so. It says, of course, you're stupid. You don't know. That's why we wrote this book. We wrote this book for you. You don't know what the problem is. Selfishness and self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. You know what self-delusion means? It means you're deluded. Self-seeking and self-pity, we step on toes of fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later put us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So if you think I'm wrong, you know, that's why they wrote the book, for you, because you don't know. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of the selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid. We must, or it kills us. No way of, this is after we get rid of the drinking, entirely getting rid of this self without his aid. It says God makes that possible. God makes that possible. And then it goes into some stuff that I'm talking about in a few minutes if I have time. It says God makes, I want to leave that for a second, go back to the higher power deal. So they're talking about this God thing.
What are they really talking about? Who is he? What is he? Later on it says, when we sincerely took such a position. I'll tell you what else it says. It says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Well, how do you do that? You quit playing God. If you say, I don't know how to do it, you better find somebody who can give you some hints. You better turn. You're not going to find somebody to tell you how to quit playing God if you're going to piss off at everybody from the podium who talks about God. You're not going to find somebody who can show you or suggest you or give you hints as to how to quit playing God if you're going to run away from or be pissed off or angry at anybody who talks about God and a relationship with God. You're not going to find somebody who tells you how to quit playing God if you decide, well, I think I'll pick that atheist. Even though there's a chapter to the agnostic, and by the way, you may not realize this, and do we allow the agnostics here? Are they free to be here, atheists? I think we ought to import them. I think if atheists and agnostics, I was an atheist, I think if they're not here, if they weren't here, you'd have to bring them in. So people can make a judgment. There is, atheists and agnostics have been all over AA. If atheism and agnosticism worked, if people liked it, we wouldn't be having any talk about God. Every AA meeting would be about atheism and agnosticism. My mother started, it used to meet in this group, the Freethinkers group. It was like the anti-God group. My mother, isn't that a joke? You know what I mean? And I loved her. She had 19 years, and she was a wonderful person. And I went to the meeting once, and they were angry. What do you think they were angry about? God. That's all they could talk about. There was more talk about God at that atheist meeting than anything else. And you know what I said? I said, this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. Everybody in AA hates the idea of God. They all hate the idea of God. You guys got the ticket. It's attractive rather than emotion. If you guys are right, 20, 30 years from now, there's going to be nothing but free thinkers meeting. There's still only one. Go figure. Because it works. It works. You want to play games or wishful thinking and try to jump into something that doesn't work? The reason why, do you have any idea, all these guys that hate God and hate Christians, hate Jewish people, hate whatever religious people are, you want to know something? Do you have any idea? I want you to think, I'm just going to give you a little thought to ponder. With all the people that are putting down God and putting down religion, do you have any idea what would happen if tomorrow every believer, strong believer in God, I'm talking about the deity God, left AA and started another organization? And the only people that were in Alcoholics Anonymous were atheists and agnostics. Do you know how long Alcoholics Anonymous would last before the fist fight started? You know what this place would look like? We're the glue, the believers are the glue that hold this thing together so people can stand up and say, I hate the God stuff. Because of believers, AA is here and will continue to be here. We're the strength that holds this together, and we're like apologetics because we're alcoholics that we should even talk about, even though that's what the big book says. Well, that's the nature of this disease. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decide that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone. It's the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass the freedom. When we seriously took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. You want some remarkable things happening in your life? Are you sitting there saying, when is the remarkable stuff going to happen? Well, it ain't going to happen to you unless you sincerely take this position. I'm sorry, that's not me. That's the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our basic text, which you all agree on. If you're pissed off at me, write New York. Tell them to stop publishing this crap. Because this is the crap they're publishing. You know what I mean? Tell them you don't agree with it and you think it's wrong. And if everybody just followed you, we'd all be happy. You're just one other thumb-sucking crybaby that nobody wants to be with. Nobody wants what you have. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he's all-powerful. You know, he's not a higher power. He's the highest power. He's all-powerful. Like only one. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. You know what that means? That means you got to keep close to him. How can you keep close to him when you don't even know who he is or what his work is, when the only thing you're supposed to do is be of maximum service to him? Absolutely. You know the thing on the thing that says first things first? You know, we haven't heard a thing about saying first things first. That's from Dr. Bob. That's a quote from the Bible. Seek ye first the kings of God and all things will be added unto you. That's right from the Bible. That's from Dr. Bob. First things first is seek ye first the kingdom of God and all things will be added unto you. You know what they were talking about? They were talking about a God. They were talking about a deity. He provided what we needed if we got close to him, performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs.
More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. We discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of His presence. His presence. Later on in the book, it talks about that God consciousness of His presence. You know He's there. And there's something that comes of that. There's a consequence to know that God's there and you're thinking about God and He's in your mind. There's a consequence. It's the way you act and the way you feel and how you feel about yourself. It allows you to talk to groups of people and talk about your faith, and because, you know, you don't sit there and second-guess yourself or worry about yourself, because self-esteem comes back. We discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of His presence. We began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, the year after we were reborn. Then you say the prayer, and it says, we thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. To Him. So you tell me, after all that and all that I read, and 95% of it was out of the big book, and about 5% out of my own personal experiences, tell me what I'm supposed to do with a guy who says, I don't want to hear about this God stuff, but I want to do AA. Tell me what it means when somebody says, I want to do AA. I want to stay sober, but I'm not going to do any of this God stuff. What's he telling me? He's telling me he's not going to do AA. Should I apologize to him? Should I say, let me twist this program around so that it can be suitable and work for you, an alcoholic who really doesn't want to work it? Is that what this is about? To try to water this thing down enough so that you will buy into it because you're so important, because we don't care if everybody else dies. We're going to water it down sufficiently so that you won't get offended. Let the other people want depth and weight and want to get somewhere. Let them go to hell or die or something like that. We want to make sure it's so watered down that it won't offend anybody. You know, some people need to be offended. Some people need to drink. Some people are going to drink. A lot of people are going to drink. So let's talk about this higher power thing and this God thing and this concept of God thing. So here's the two groups. Remember I was talking about the two groups? The people just, well, those groups can be divided up into two other things. They're really the same two groups, really. And this has to do with the higher power, and I want you to think about this for a second. Here's the deal. Either God is or He isn't. Either you believe there is a God, or you don't. Now, you could say, I'm not sure, or I'm just, that's perfectly permissible in Alcoholics Anonymous. But in the end, God either is or He isn't. That's what He either is or He isn't. Now let me tell you the difference on that deal. If He isn't, if the God, if what you really think this says is, it's perfectly permissible. You see, they wrote chapter the agnostic and the atheist, and chapter the atheist for a reason. Does anybody know what the reason was? It wasn't to say this is a good thing. Just a little hint. At the end of the book, if you read Dr. Bob's nightmare, the last thing Dr. Bob says, I guess he wasn't politically correct at the time, is this. This is Dr. Bob's nightmare. Check it out. This isn't me, if you think I'm tough. If you think, gee, if I could only hang with Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, I'd be okay. You couldn't do it. They'd have you down on your knees. Believe me, you'd be giving your life to Jesus. You wouldn't hang with those guys. You wouldn't make it with those guys. Because this is what they would say to you. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, or a skeptic, or of any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. That's not me, that's Dr. Bob Smith. These guys were deists. They believe in God, a heavenly creator. That's why they use that word all through the book, and that's why they believed in it. And I'll tell you why they believed in that. And they believed that He was working in their lives and you can have an experience. Because here's one of two things. Either you believe there is no God. There is no God. And this book basically says it's okay to believe there's no God. You can believe that. Because if you're an alcoholic, let me tell you something. If you're an alcoholic, somebody can tell you, you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. And you can drive down the street and say, what the hell do they mean by that? Trust me. If you can do that, you can believe this book says anything. If it doesn't fit with you, you can believe anything. You can be bought, sold anything. You're going to believe what you want to believe. Because your alcoholic life is the only normal one and you don't really want to change. So if you don't believe if there is no God, if there isn't a guy that you can have a relationship, a spirit you can have a relationship that loves you and cares about you and wants something, if that's true, then listen, here's the deal. You're alone. You're alone. I don't care if you're married, you're alone. One day your husband's going to die, one day your wife's going to die. I don't care if you're in a group, one day that group's going to disappear. I don't care if you have a sponsor, one day he's going to die. I've had two die on me. One day, it's going to be 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're going to have those thousand thoughts, that committee going through your brain. You're going to be thinking about the money. You're going to be thinking about the cancer. You're going to be thinking about all the crap that's going on in your life. And you know, some the little group, river group of Alcoholics Anonymous ain't going to be there. And your sponsor ain't going to be there. And your wife may or may not be there, and even or your husband may or may not be there. And even if he is there, you want to know something, you don't have a great relationship with him. And you know what you're going to realize? Your mother's going to be dead and your father's going to be dead. And you know, you're going to realize you are alone. Because if there is no God, you are alone. And you know what that means? That means everything you do, your entire life, from birth to death, you better rely on yourself, because ain't nobody really there permanently to help you or care about you or anything like that. It's all up to you. And that's the life that you've just bought into, because you've chosen that life. And there is no higher power, and there ain't no anything. And you can call by, if the higher power is this desk or the wind, you are alone. If the higher power isn't a God who has all power and cares about you, you are alone. If the higher power is the branch on the tree, you are alone. Because the branch doesn't give a shit about you. If the higher power is this group, you are alone. Because they'll care about you, sir, but it ain't going to be permanent, and they don't have all power. Trust me, the group doesn't have all power. I asked them to pay my IRS bill. They wouldn't do it. Believe me on that deal. You're alone. Well, that's one group. There's a group like that in here. Did you know that? There's a group that's in here. You can recognize them because they're pissed off. They're pissed off at me. They're pissed off at anybody that talks about God. You know, it says it's a spiritual axiom. Whenever you're upset, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you. You know, you hear somebody pissed off about God or people talking about God, and they're pissed off, and they're saying, I don't like that guy and everything. You need to ask yourself a question. Is that sobriety? Does that show wellness or does that show sickness? Is that what you want or what you don't want? Is that what you think this deal is about or not? And then there's another group of people. It's a smaller group. You know, and the other group of people, they believe in this stuff. They believe there is a God, there is a creator. I can't tell you what he looks like. He's a spirit. I can't tell you what the deal is. You know, and you know something? It's not just some fuzzy thing. It's something that cares about me. I talk to him. I pray to him. Sometimes I'll hear something go on in my mind, and I know it's him, and he's telling me stuff. He's saying, I love you. Don't worry about it. It's going to be okay, Russ. Just go ahead and do that deal and not do that thing. Or speak to him. He talks to me. You know what it says in the big book? It says if you have that experience, if you have that deal going on, that you believe that there is a God, and that he cares about you, and he's a personal God, and you have that relationship, it says you're going to have inspirational thinking. It says that in the 11th step. It says the thoughts at first seem sort of crazy, and all of a sudden you're doing stuff. Every alcoholic in here has had a situation. I shouldn't say every alcoholic. Most has had a situation where they do or say or something happens, and you say something like, that wasn't me. I don't even know where that came from. I said that thing, and I did that thing, and it came from, I don't know where it came from. And it was like just perfect. And it says, it says this inspirational thinking, it seems odd, but we come to rely upon it. The more we depend upon him, the more we relate to him, the more we have him as a relationship and a real thing in our life, we have this God consciousness. And all of a sudden we feel strengthened and built up. Everything they're talking about in this book, we lose our fears of today, tomorrow, and the here. It's not that life gets perfect. It's not that we're not broke sometimes. It's not that we don't get cancer. I've had cancer. It's not that we don't have problems. It's not that people don't act badly. It just doesn't seem to affect us that much because, you know why? Because I don't know about you, but I'm not alone. I haven't been alone for years. I used to be alone. I drink scotch. That's why alcoholics drink, because they're alone. He'll know loneliness as few men do. I've never been alone. You know, the worst times in my life, when I had cancer or I was broke or something was going on and I didn't know what was happening, you want to know something? I was never alone. You know what he told me? He said, don't worry. He says, don't drink, go to meetings. He says, help other people. He says, I'm always going to take care of you. He says, I'm your heavenly father. He said, I will never let you down. You know, here's the great thing. You get a choice as to how to live your life. What, you think you get a repeat on this? I mean, I don't know. Maybe you do. You think this is like a dress rehearsal? You think your life is a dress rehearsal? You think you have to try? Or do you think at the end of your life, maybe, I'll tell you what would be a sad thing. If you get to the end of your life and this is what you get, and you realize you blew the whole, you say, you know, I could have done that. I could have done this. I'm 85, I'm 86, I'm 90, I'm whatever I am. He says, man, I could have done this with him. I could have done this with him. I could have done this and I would never have been alone. I could have done this with him on my side. I could have done this like those guys were suggesting in the big book. That crazy guy Russell was screaming up there. I could have done this like I could have done this the way he was suggesting I did this. And now I'm 9 years old and I want to like a do-over. You know what I mean? And it ain't going to happen. This is the way I did it. And I squandered my life. I've squandered the hours that could have been worthwhile. When I could have done it and it was and the signs were all in front of me. And there were people talking to me about this. And I chose, because of my own thinking, my own sickness, I like that alone crap better. Because I didn't want anybody telling me what to do. So I wanted to fight you on this. Every second, I'm going to do it my way. Hey, you know something? Go at it. Have fun with it. You don't have to do it now. Do it 10 years from now. Do it 20 years from now. Come in 10 years from now. Do it the angry way. Do it the alone way. You know, fight the world. You know, hand-to-hand combat. Do it your way. Tell me how that works out. We'll talk about it. 10 years from now, you can come back to me and says, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. I know what you're talking. You got to do it. It's just like drinking. We all had a drink, probably 5 years too long. People were telling us, you got to stop drinking. People, the world was telling us you're killing yourself. But we had to take it to the limit. Everybody has to drink their last drink. Everybody, you can't rob an alcoholic, it's desperation. Everybody had to get desperate enough and drink their last drink and destroy their lives and destroy their people, where all of a sudden they walk in Alcoholics Anonymous and now all of a sudden they're like freaking brilliant. I can't drink, I'm an alcoholic. And it's so clear. It's so clear. And then somebody comes up to me and says, try the God thing. He says, hey, you do it my way. And we do the same shit with God. I don't do it this way. And we fight it and we do it and everything like that. And if we're lucky, after we've destroyed about 10 more years of our lives and we can't get a relationship going, we go through 5 divorces and our kids hate us and everything like that. And we're trying to figure out what's going on. We get to the end of the deal and maybe we get desperate enough and we give our lives to God and everything I say. And then all of a sudden we get brilliant again. It's the God. It's God. It's right there in the book. It was reading it. And all of a sudden, it's right there. Didn't you see it? And people look at us and say, why don't you shut up? You know? That's why they wrote the book. God bless you. Thank you very much.
Russell. Yeah, Russell. You're welcome. We have any announcements?